This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi there, and welcome to Ticket for One, the podcast that celebrates female solo travel. My name is Kate Wills. I'm a travel journalist, and each week I'm going to be speaking to a woman who inspires me about her adventures alone. Today's guest is the photojournalist Emily Garthwaite. Emily's award-winning work has taken her all over the world, from the coffee farms of Ethiopia to the rainforests of Borneo via the mud baths of Romania. On a visit to Iraq, she captured the annual cross-country Arbaeen pilgrimage as she too walked the 500 kilometres twice. She also live-streamed the event to millions on her social media. Emily recently founded Women Translate, an all-female language services company, and she's also worked with the British government and the NSPCC on an FGM awareness campaign. I was so interested to chat to Emily about what it's been like travelling alone as a woman in places often perceived as difficult or dangerous, and why it is that she feels that being a lone female photojournalist can actually give her an advantage in some spaces. We also talked about why Disney movies on a laptop are an essential travel companion and why she lived in India for 6 years without ever seeing the Taj Mahal. Hi, Emily. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Whereabouts in the world are you calling from?
I'm actually in Spain on a job.
Lovely. Nice. I mean, it's many people's dream job to travel the world taking photos. So tell me just briefly how you got into photojournalism.
Well, a lot of it was sort of when I kind of retrospectively look back at my career, it seems to make a lot more sense than it did at the time. But I'd say it all really started as a young teenager and borrowing my mother's camera. And it all started with a forest fire, which was, my family live in Surrey and we live on the edge of some National Trust land, and 2 and a bit miles of it burnt down in a matter of a couple of days because it's such peaty soil, so it sort of burns underneath the ground. And my father let me go up onto the heathland and photograph the woods on fire, which was really heartbreaking for me. And, you know, it took 10 years to grow back. And I think it was quite a formative experience because I just recall feeling so frustrated that no one knew about it and feeling so compelled to tell that story because I wanted people to know it was really important. And when I look back at everything, I definitely see that as being the real change in me. And then just such an odd turn of events. But during lockdown, the fire happened again. 12 years later, I didn't go to see it, actually. I just couldn't do it. And I still haven't seen it. It was beyond where we live, probably like a mile and a half away. And I just couldn't engage with it. But it was this odd change where I'd sort of gone back to being a child during lockdown with my family. And then the fire happened again. And there I was with the camera and, you know, so much more experience.
Coming full circle.
Yeah, but a really sort of concerning full circle. And now that won't grow back for another 10 years, you know, until it's sort of back to the state that it was originally. And I guess it's just the life cycle, isn't it? It was quite a sort of spiritual moment, really reflected on how much my life had changed.
Yeah, I'm sure. And lots of symbolism in fire and things like that anyway.
Rebirth.
Yeah. So it all started in Surrey. But since then, you've been to some incredible places. How do you sort of choose your topics or decide where you want to go and shoot?
I think a lot of it has come about by chance. And I think a lot of the jobs that I've been employed for have mainly been about the intention I set for a project and my approach with subjects. So more often than not, it's focused on women's stories or misunderstood, misrepresented communities. So I've done a lot of work with Shia Muslims, and I've done a lot of work with women survivors, be it of war, of slavery, of sexual violence, and with that you end up working a lot with children. And I guess I've had an opportunity to do some amazing projects in the UK and in Asia, and I had my first visit last year to the US. I'd never been to America.
Oh wow.
Which was really amazing. It was quite whirlwind, and I'd always felt that it was the place I wanted to visit more than anything, because growing up and the perception of America and the kind of the polarities that you read about, and particularly the political situation. So I went to Detroit. That was my first experience of America. And I then was based outside of Detroit in Dearborn, which has the largest population of Middle Eastern immigrants outside of the Middle East. So some of the roads are in Arabic and the communities are so diverse. You've got Palestinian, Jordanian, Syrian, Lebanese, Iraqi, Iranian. Oh, it's absolutely amazing. It's very representative of America, a melting pot of cultures and identities and stories.
That sounds incredible. Do you have a favourite shot or a favourite kind of place from your travels?
My favourite place is the Kurdistan region of Iraq. And I hadn't been there before mid last year. And I arrived there and within 10 days I rented an apartment and moved.
Wow.
And I've always thought I've been to some really beautiful places in the world. And I've always thought, oh, would I live here? And no, I don't think I would. It's not quite right for me. And then I was in the Kurdistan region of Iraq and I just thought, this is heaven on earth. I love this country so much, and I'm so fond of doing the work here and exploring the landscape and working with the communities on the ground. And so unfortunately, due to COVID, I haven't been able to go back yet, and my apartment is still very quiet, but that's my favorite place in the world.
Okay, tell us a little bit about what it's like there, because I think for many people that, you know, they kind of get quite a restricted view of Iraq from maybe what they've seen on the news. So tell us what it's really like, and, you know, what made you feel like you wanted to live there?
I first traveled to Iraq in 2017, and I was in southern Iraq, which is, so it's two different regions. So you've got the Kurdistan region of Iraq, which is an autonomous region run by Kurds, and then the rest of Iraq, and it's marked by a border. So it's a different visa system, for example, if you fly from the UK. And then you've got what would be known, if you're in the Kurdistan region of Iraq, as federal Iraq, which is predominantly Arab. And they're both incredibly different landscapes and very different cultures and different languages. And the experience of both have really, really shaped my work. And more than, I mean, I absolutely love the Kurdistan region of Iraq, but logistically, it's also a much easier experience for someone who's moving from the UK. For example, it's visa on arrival. It's a very comfortable kind of travel experience, whilst there's a lot that has to be arranged if you're going to southern Iraq. And in the north, it's mountainous, it's lush. I always love renting a car and going for a drive very freely. There's some great places to stay, some fantastic hotels. It's a very, very open-minded, liberal place. It's also been through immense hardships and still is. It has a huge refugee population, majority Syrian Kurds, and still experiences airstrikes from Turkey and huge amount of difficulties. But in the face of it, it is a really thriving region and it has so much to offer. I'm working with a number of different partners and organizations just to encourage people to come and visit. My sales pitch is I normally go straight in saying there's a ski resort, and then people go, a ski resort in Iraq? And then I go, yes. And then I'll start the full
spiel.
Yeah, I've got in trouble with like clients before and they're like, please stop plugging Iraq. It's, you know, can we try something else? So I am a huge fan of the country. I was reflecting a lot on lockdown, saying like, what makes me happy and what stories do I want to tell and purpose and things. And all of it came back to Iraq. I realized that that's the place that I want to be. That's where my soul kind of, you know, that's where it sings. I love the place.
Yeah. And a lot of places that you visit are, I guess, countries that some people might perceive as being quite difficult for a woman traveling alone. I'm thinking about Iran and Afghanistan and places like that. What have your experiences been like there?
I think my experience is informed a lot by privilege and the colour of my skin. I find it a very hard sort of way to look at generalization of women, because I think if I was a black woman traveling in Iran, the experience would be very, very different. So I'm also immensely protected in a lot of the work I do, because I'd be going with an organization or I'd be going as part of like a conference. Or so the experience of a lot of these trips is very sheltered a lot of the time. In many ways, I wish I had more freedom. But say, like in Afghanistan, I have to go because it's with an NGO. You live in a compound and you have to go everywhere with security because of insurance. And no one wants anything to go wrong. Otherwise, programs are defunded. So it's very important that you go by the book. But, you know, my experiences in the US have been at times very difficult. The same in London, the same in Iran, same in Afghanistan, the same wherever I go, there are experiences that are very challenging, because if you are an independent woman, even if you are with an organization, you're still sort of independently working. And 9 times out of 10, you're working with a large team of men, and there are challenges to all these sorts of jobs. But what I have done is made sure that I work with women translators, that I try to get a team of women around me. So the last couple of jobs I've done have just been with women, and then a male driver, because it's obviously it's harder in the Middle East it's just not a typical career for a woman to have in certain countries. And that has changed a lot for me, because the space and the working environment, especially if you're documenting women's stories, for example, is very appropriate. I don't see why there should be a male translator for women's stories. You know, all of these spaces have to be safe for everyone. So that's my experience of traveling now as a woman working as a photojournalist. It's so informed by Instagram following, for example. You know, people place certain people on pedestals for having a larger following. I find I'm taken more seriously, and it's such a vacuous thing. But it's amazing how much it informs an experience. I think I neglect it quite a lot, because I don't really value it in the same way that someone else might value it, because we've sort of got this, and I don't really fully understand the whole Instagram setup. I guess it sort of like legitimizes someone. And there are some ridiculously incredible photographers who've got 200 followers who frankly yeah. should take all of mine.
It's funny how that's changing things. And actually, that's a really interesting point you say about being a woman and surrounding yourself with other women. And I wondered if actually maybe being female does give you an advantage in some places, you know, gives you access to spaces where men might not be allowed or might not be trusted in the same way.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed the all women spaces. Like when I'm traveling in southern Iraq, if I'm staying with a family, you'll be separated into like the men and the women's quarters. And I've just loved that time with women, away from any male gaze, and just the ability to talk freely about what it is to be a woman and all of our experiences. And it's amazing what happens within only 5 minutes of women alone together. We're already plotting.
Yeah, it's already a special atmosphere, isn't it?
It's an amazing atmosphere, especially when there are babies and yeah. toddlers involved. And some of the most important conversations I've had are in those spaces, because there's a commonality that we all experience, but there's also certain things which they are going through that they share with me that I'm not in a position to advise. They are so complicated, but you can support. And I think one of the real joys of being a photojournalist is being this anonymous bystander for a lot of people, where they can share their inner thoughts and they trust you to keep them. And for the most part, a lot of things people tell me, I don't share. I always think there's a time when you're interviewing someone and it's very, very clear that answering questions knowing that there will be an audience and knowing that it's for use by an organization. And then within that interview, there are times when they are speaking to you and you only, and they want to share something personal. And I think I've really learned over the years, like, the boundary between those two. You know, they're just sharing it with you in the room.
Person to person rather than as a journalist. That's so interesting.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And have you done much solo traveling for yourself, you know, that hasn't been on assignment? Or are you just always kind of working? Do you always take your cameras?
I've been traveling solo since I was 19. But I was thinking, the first time I ever traveled solo, I must have been 10 or 11 years old. And I went from Southampton Airport, and my parents put me on a flight to see my grandparents in Jersey. And I don't know whether you traveled, I think if you're under 16 or under, I'm not sure how old until you can sort of go independently, but you get picked up by like a minder from the airline, and then you get taken through. And I remember feeling so proud of myself for being trusted enough at that age to fly on my own. And what's the flight to Jersey back in those days was, I think it was only like 35 minutes. So by the time you'd got up into the air, they would hand you like a Coca-Cola. You were expected to drink it very quickly and then you'd be landing. And that was an amazing experience. And I haven't forgotten it, because it was sort of this sense of trust and knowing that I would be able to get to my grandparents and going on this plane and things. So I wouldn't say that shaped everything, but I certainly wanted to travel on my own. And it was a very, very purposeful an act of self-care, actually. And I felt that I really, really needed that space. And I really needed to spend some time with myself and to understand myself better. I was very unsure of what I wanted to do, and more than anything, unsure of what I wanted to say. And those years of traveling on my own and reading and being mindful and learning how people interact with you, and the good people and the bad people, and meeting people from different cultures and religions. And, you know, it helps you understand your place in the world. And it also helps you understand other people's experiences of the world. And we may live in the same place and we may travel in the same way, but our experiences and the way we're treated will be different. So I think it's a must for anyone, but it certainly doesn't have to be done when you're young. I've met amazing women who have travelled solo at 70, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's such an important thing for everyone to do at least once. And I'm always really surprised when I meet people who've never traveled by themselves or kind of, yeah, just taken themselves on a trip, because it is a very different experience, I think, when you're solo. But it can be difficult and lonely at times, isn't it? Are there, you know, things that you find challenging about it, and how do you overcome them?
I mean, I've had some incredibly challenging moments with work, and I think that Netflix has always been, I'm sorry to bring it up, but on my phone, downloading films onto my phone, I mean, they have to be really light films, like Finding Nemo and things like that. I kid you not. They're super, super light films, because I can't, when work is really intense, I have to be able to tune out, and I'm still not very good at it. But I think I don't so much get like lonely, but I can feel isolated. If I have any freedom taken away from me, I can feel that quite powerfully. And I also need my own space, because I'm a very introverted person. So when I'm working and I can't have that moment of solitude, I can find that very, very difficult. But I think that there are a lot of challenges. Loneliness is definitely a mentality, for sure. And I really, really enjoy my own company. That's what I crave more than anything. So I feel like, I was saying the other day that I'd really like to go off and do a solo trip, just, you know, to a city, or, you know, without any purpose. It doesn't have to be a story, just to go off and wander. I think that would be very important. But I did manage to do that in January. I'd sort of developed quite a negative relationship with travel, because I was traveling all the time, and then I would come back and I'd try and see friends in London, and I would have only 4 days, and I'd be exhausted, and I'd normally be a bit sort of like wired, because I know I'd need to be present, and I would just give my energy away, because otherwise I felt like a bad friend. And then in January I had some time off in between a job, and I rented this car, and I went driving around. I went to go and see a friend in Sulaymaniyah, which is south of Erbil, the city in Kurdistan region of Iraq. And then we went out hiking, and it was snowing at points. And I sat in a lot of coffee shops, and I journaled, and I really reconnected with travel again. Because for the most part, I would always go to a country and I would experience a part of the country that was quite troubled or was going through difficulties. And actually, it's so important that you have that balance. And that's, I think, Kurdistan region of Iraq has been such a blessing for me in so many ways, because I've walked for weeks and weeks and weeks across that country with the team at the Abraham Path Initiative. So I've just been able to roam around this country and meet people along the way, and then also do more intense, you know, specific assignments about communities and certain issues, you know, facing communities. So by having that balance, I think it's a much more well-rounded travel experience.
Definitely going a bit deeper into one place rather than, yeah, trying to do too much. What tips would you give to someone who's wanting to travel alone? Other than then, you know, Finding Nemo on your Netflix, which I love.
A very good first aid kit. Mm-hmm. That's an absolute plus. It sounds very, very boring, but it's so important. And good travel insurance. I'm thinking of my experiences. Eye mask, earplugs. With all of my work, it's so important, because if I'm in a family home and there are kids crying and things, you have to be able to tune out. I also, in terms of just like tips for how you travel, always walk.
That's such a good one. Yeah, because you miss so much when you're in a car.
Yeah, and I think I like rethink what a country or a city is. I know they say you should go to all 15 museums and, you know, every single market and this list of restaurants, but that doesn't mean that you haven't kind of fulfilled. If you don't do those things, you've still had your own experience of a city or a region. I remember telling friends, like, I've been working in India for 6 years and I still haven't been to the Taj Mahal. And a couple of people have been like, oh, you haven't seen India. And I thought, it's not really the case. And I think that's really important. People just end up being under so much pressure and stressed if I've met people, you know, on the road and they're trying to do everything and you can't. And actually the best thing you can do is take a very long walk and then sit in a coffee shop and watch the world go by. And I just encourage people to slow down. People are moving so quickly, trying to do everything they can. Moments of authenticity are the most important. And the person you're sitting next to, for example, in the coffee shop, no doubt, if you've picked one that isn't on the tourist circuit, if you pick a local one, you might end up having a remarkable conversation with someone in the region who will then recommend something else for you to do. And you sort of, through power of positivity and intuition, you can start an entirely different journey. So I think that's really important. And that's what I've started to do now. Whenever I'm traveling, I will walk.
That's great. I think that's the other nice thing about being on your own, is that often you will kind of fall into conversations with people that maybe you wouldn't have done if you were traveling with a partner or with a friend. Just walking and chatting can actually reveal so much about a place, rather than, I think, Instagram as well is a bit to blame for people wanting to kind of tick off this checklist of you know, must-see destinations in a place. It's about slowing things down.
My partner always says walking at 3 miles an hour, like life at 3 miles an hour, is the most sort of fulfilling.
I like that. Yeah. Rebecca Solnit says that that's actually the speed our mind works at as well, is like 3 miles an hour. That's why you have some good thoughts when you're walking sometimes. One place we haven't talked about, which has really been on my list of places I want to go, is Iran. How did you find it?
I had quite an odd experience because the team I'd met in Karbala in Iraq, and they had invited me to Iran, and I went to Qom, which is the sort of the religious epicenter of Iran. So I had a very conservative experience, and it was mostly centered around the community in Qom. And also I just solely wanted to focus on that. So I didn't have much of a sort of, inverted commas, like travel experience. But I see the last trip I had as being the first trip and one of many. And one cannot tell all those stories in one go. So I'm really excited to return. And I think I would recommend everyone visit Iran. It's truly beautiful. Delicious food, extraordinary people, and generosity and kindness. And I also think that it's a country which is perfect for, you're able to see a lot of it very quickly because of the way in which you can drive so much of it. If you go with a company, you can happily drive from Tehran and go all the way down to the coast and experience a lot of the country very quickly. I would highly recommend it. I was so excited to go.
Where's next on your list? Is there anywhere you're kind of dreaming of visiting? Or
I will be going to Northern Ireland, which is one of my favourite places in the world.
Ah, okay.
And I'll be walking around Northern Ireland for some time and looking at folklore. One of my favourite jobs right now, which is such a privilege, that a private client, and I photograph his children growing up. Such a shame, because it's like they're some of my favourite photographs, because it goes so deep into the lives of these two boys. But I'm on it right now, and so I photograph them living and breathing and growing up and learning, and how their relationship develops with me and the camera. It's becoming more and more collaborative the older they get.
A bit like that Richard Linklater film, Boyhood, you know, where he
It's a bit like
that.
Boyhood, yeah.
How many years have you been doing that for?
It'll be coming up to 3 years. Yeah, they're turning 7 in October. So they've changed a lot. That's the negotiation with the pictures now. I mean, I was just saying I'm off to go and do a podcast. And then Mehdi was like saying to me, and when you get back, we're going to continue with the Lego. Don't be late. So now we've moved on to some serious Lego creations. Yeah.
I love how fearless and intrepid Emily has been while travelling alone in search of a story. But I do think it's possible to have an adventure a bit closer to home. You don't need to go to the Kurdistan region of Iraq. In fact, one of the best things about travelling by yourself is that it can make even the most run-of-the-mill trip feel quite high octane. So here are some more tips on how to dial up the excitement next time you go away by yourself. First thing I'd say is to turn your phone off. I think when you're travelling alone, it can be really tempting to rely on your phone for company. So you get it out at every opportunity and it becomes a bit like a crutch or a prop. But if you can put it on flight mode or turn it off or just put it away somewhere, it makes such a huge difference to your trip and how you experience your surroundings. I'd also say it's a good idea to do a bit of research. Even if you're in the most beautiful, incredible place, if you're finding that you're surrounded by loads of other people waving selfie sticks, it can feel hard to feel that intrepid. But if you do a bit of digging or pre-planning, you'll find there are these sort of unspoiled spots that are often like an incredibly short distance away from the main tourist track. You know, maybe it's something like hiring a kayak for the day and then you can stop off at secluded bays that main boat trips don't go to. Or, you know, maybe you do a bit of organisation and you get a permit for a national park or an area or a beach which only lets in a certain number of visitors each day. And then lastly, I think it's a really good idea to do something scary. It doesn't have to be, you know, a bungee jump or a skydive or something dramatic. Can be really simple, like trying the local food or just doing something you'd never do at home, like an open mic night or a dance class. I think anything that you can do that like takes you out of your home self is a way to make travel more adventurous and memorable. And that's actually a great thing about traveling alone is that, you know, there's no one that you know to embarrass yourself in front of. That's all from me. Thank you so much for listening to Ticket for One. I'll be back next week, or you can follow me on Instagram at Kate Wills Writes. If you are enjoying the podcast, I'd appreciate it so much if you could rate it and review it, as it really helps get a new podcast out there. I hope to see you next week, and goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.